And now for another amazing episode of the Pop Zara podcast.
Hey, how you guys doing? My name is Corey Gulliher. I am the senior games editor for Pop Zara Press. That's popzara.com. If you want to see game reviews, you come here. If you want to see film reviews, you come here. If you want to see book reviews, I don't even know how to read, but I'm going to guess you come here. We are here today to talk about a new game, relatively new, about a week old at this point, that has been blowing everybody's minds lately. I've been playing a lot of it, and my co-host here hasn't played a lot of it. I want to introduce my co-host real quick, actually, Sebastian Stoddard. I don't know that I've done a podcast with you before, but it's great to be here. Sebastian, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Corey. Thank you.
It's fantastic to have you here. Today we are talking about The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. We are doing what basically every other podcast on the internet is doing, but we are Pop Zara, and we're doing it better. We're here to talk about Tears of the Kingdom. We have a big old list full of guidelines for things to talk about, but if there's rules, baby, I break them, and that's what we're doing today, except not, because I kind of like these guidelines. We're going to start with what they say right here. The first thing it says here, thanks to our helpful managing editor, Nathan Evans, is to talk a bit about a brief personal history of Zelda games. And I'll go ahead and knock this out real quick. Sebastian, I bet yours going to be longer than mine. My history with Zelda is that I've beaten Ocarina of Time, and I've beaten Link's Awakening on the Game Boy, and that's about it. I don't have a huge amount of history with Zelda. Obviously, I played a lot of Breath of the Wild, because I think everybody did, but outside of that, that's about it. Sebastian, how about you?
So I do have a pretty long history with Zelda. The first Zelda game I ever played, though, was on the DS. It was Phantom Hourglass, and that is my absolute favorite Zelda game. I'm sure that's my nostalgia kicking in more than anything.
Right.
But I have played pretty much every Zelda game that's come out since then. I did really like Ocarina of Time. I wasn't a fan of Spirit Tracks. Majora's Mask gives me nightmares. It was one of the first series that I ever really played. So it has a special place in my heart as my favorite. And when Breath of the Wild came out, it really reignited that fire, especially since all my friends started playing it too.
And then Tears of the Kingdom comes out, and obviously you've probably played a lot of this too. How much time have you put into Tears of the Kingdom? Do you know?
I want to say last time I checked it was like 60 hours.
60 hours? Yeah, I'm the one that Nathan Evans actually put as the reviewer of this one. I've probably put in maybe 20 or 30 or maybe 40. I'd have to take a look. It's definitely not that much, but that's the thing with this game in particular, is that there is a ridiculous amount of content. I don't know that 60 hours is enough to see like half of it. It's insane.
Oh no, I'm not even like close to beating any of it. I get so distracted playing this game.
So you get distracted playing it, and that brings us over to our second point, actually. You probably get distracted playing it because of the innovation aspects of it, which is, we'll go ahead and, you know, you guys have heard about this already from people, sources other than us, I'm sure. The big gimmick in Tears of the Kingdom is this kind of building and creation mechanic. You basically can pick up items, stick them together like you got some crazy glue, assemble vehicles, you can assemble weapons, you can assemble vehicle weapons, you can assemble vehicles that don't work, which is mostly what I do. And it says here, how innovative is Tears of the Kingdom, not just for Zelda, but gaming in general. Sebastian, what do you think?
I think that adding in like the engineering aspect of it was pretty innovative, especially when you take like what they had done in Breath of the Wild with all of those different sigils and stuff that you can use, and they updated them to try to make things easier while also keeping things from getting really boring. And I think in terms of like open world games in general, that works so well because Zelda is so expansive, and that's what you really want from an open world game, but it's so hard to see all of it when you don't have the tools at your disposal to really get through it and not have that tedious task of like running for an hour to get to the other side of the map. And I think adding in the elements of being able to build your own vehicles, even if they don't work.
Mine mostly don't, so that's very cool.
But I think in that aspect, it's definitely really innovative in trying to make the open world game more focused towards exploration and taking out that tedious aspect of not being able to explore everything because it just takes too long.
Yeah, that's pretty much the experience that I had too. You know, you go back and you try to play Breath of the Wild these days, and you end up contrasting it to games like Genshin Impact. I think Genshin Impact is what I've played the most of in that this particular question mark genre. And it feels slow, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It is slow from the perspective of, you know, you have to think about how you deal with problems. You got to think about, you know, how you're going to get somewhere. That's not necessarily how Tears of the Kingdom works. If you see somewhere and you want to get to it, you bring out a glider and you stick some rockets to it. And that typically solves your problem, in my experience anyway.
Definitely. But even then, I think like you still have a lot of opportunity to do that problem solving that makes the game really fun.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause like you had mentioned, making vehicles is not easy. And there are so many like side quests and stuff that require you to know how to do it. And that was something that I actually really liked, is that all the shrines now really depend on your knowledge of using the things that are given to you. So I feel like it gives you more training than Breath of the Wild did on how to use everything that you have. Because
right.
I felt like that was one of my big problems in Breath of the Wild, was there were certain things that I just never used, like cryokinesis. I hated that.
You use it at the very start when you have to, and then you never touch it again.
I never touched it again. And I feel like with this one, there is something for me to do with each and everything that I'm given, as long as I'm like trying to think about the things at my disposal, especially when it comes to building and stuff. But I also have noticed that as I play, like I still get the enjoyment out of just jumping off of something with a paraglider and seeing how far it can take me. Because there is just so much stuff that you can miss by doing everything really fast.
And, you know, from that perspective, too, I feel like Tears of the Kingdom's world's a bit more dense, too. In large part because it has this building mechanic and encourages you to kind of experiment with stuff. So I did a first impressions piece, and I'm doing a full review for PopZara, but I write for another site, too. And for that site, I did first impression piece, and I said things like, as you are moving about the world, you'll see things like little kiosks set up with building materials meant to kind of help construct houses to repopulate Hyrule. But for you, that basically means, hey, here, you know, try and make a vehicle out of this stuff. And I'm like, okay. And it's like, oh, you failed completely. And I'm like, okay. Just stuff like that, like little nuances that you can miss if you're going too fast. And I think Breath of the Wild, in contrast to a lot of its contemporaries back when it spawned a whole bunch of similar games, kind of missed the point, which was, you know, fill the world full of cool stuff, and then you got a big world that doesn't feel empty. You know, contrast that with, say, Redfall, which came out a few weeks ago and was a big old open world and didn't have a bunch of stuff and felt very empty. And don't play that game. Play this one instead. Says here, divide grading graphics versus visuals. It's basically a question of tech versus appearance, and that's an easy one. The Switch is old. It's very old. I think a modern iPad can outperform the Switch, and that means that you've got this brand new fancy game here, Tears of the Kingdom, that's running on very, very old hardware, like completely obsolete hardware, and it still looks pretty good. I'm shocked. How did you feel about how it runs? You know, I know that on PopZara, you end up doing a lot of the stuff that's not really in my wheelhouse. So you do things like visual novels, Otome, that kind of thing. And so maybe you're not quite as big on performance as I am, and I don't want to speak for you, though. What did you think about how this runs and how it looks?
I think even, like, looking back at Breath of the Wild, it had issues running on the Switch. There are times when, like, the frame rate drops. Luckily, it's nothing that's, like, super terrible that took me out of playing. Tears of the Kingdom has some of the same issues as far as the frame rate drops and sometimes things get a little slow. And then once you've kind of gotten through that area, it kind of picks up again. And it also depends on, like, I know for my Switch at least, how long I've been playing on it. Sometimes right. if I've been playing for a long time, it's just like, hey, man, put it on the dock and leave it alone for a little
really?
Bit and it'll fix it.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not super bad for me. And like you said, I play a lot of games that don't require the same like power that Tears of the Kingdom might.
Sure.
But I haven't noticed anything so bad with Tears of the Kingdom that I was like, man, I got to put it down.
Right. Yeah, I definitely played the leak, and I don't know how that happened. I woke up one day and there's a leaked version of Tears of the Kingdom. It came out a week in advance, and how did you get it? Somebody snuck into my house and downloaded it for me, I guess. And I played that. It's got a 60 FPS patch that you could get from places and play if you had the leak, which you shouldn't because that's illegal. I definitely found that even with that installed, I kind of preferred playing it on real hardware, I thought was better. And that's not necessarily always the case with Switch games. I definitely like, you know, getting like Monster Hunter Generations on my Steam Deck, and I think that's a fantastic experience with the 60 FPS patch, so on and so forth. But with Tears of the Kingdom, I feel like the Switch, shockingly enough, it's bad, but it is consistently bad. You feel all right playing it with the frame drops and stuff because that's just kind of how the game is. You get used to it. Yeah. Though it's funny, it is funny that I talk about Redfall because I would never say that I don't read these documents before we do the podcast, but right here we got a thing saying here, compare Zelda's successful launch versus Redfall's botched launch. Now, Sebastian, you didn't play Redfall, right?
I did not. I'm not big on the first-person shooters. However, I am always down for a good dumpster fire.
No, that's exactly where Redfall is, then. It is terrible.
So I did kind of keep up with its release, and I remember when it came out, I was like, man, it is a choice to launch your game that close to something like Tears of the Kingdom.
Isn't it? It's insane. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Redfall comes out and it is so terrible that Xbox, the head of Xbox, Phil Spector, I believe his name is, has to put out a document, like an article saying, yeah, no, we didn't think it was going to be like this. We're so sorry.
I'm trying to think of the last time that I saw something that just failed that miserably, because I did watch like some playthroughs and stuff of it just to get ready for this, because I was like, I'm not playing that. I'm not right. spending $70 on that. That's just not happening. And I think, like, the closest I can think of is, like, when Cyberpunk 2077 came out.
Yeah.
And it was just, I played it, and I was like, wow. I would have rather you have pushed it off again and tried to clean up whatever this is, because this is wild to me that you thought that was cool to put that out there when you knew it looked like this.
And I don't even know, like, who on that team was, like, playing through this for their testing. They're like, yeah, no, this is fine. They're going to love this. It's great. Meanwhile, you compare Tears of the Kingdom where, you know, I've got articles from, like, the Washington Post, these big old news sites and papers who don't even play games. And they're putting out these articles saying, oh, well, you know, video games are for nerds, but we really like Tears of the Kingdom. And that makes sense. The game is really fun. It has a very simple concept, the whole assembly / engineering idea you're talking about. And it makes it central to the experience and everybody can enjoy it. You know, I got this Washington Post article. Guy has his 8-year-old daughter playing it and she's assembling a whole bunch of rafts. And she doesn't even ride them. She just sends them across the lake, see if they work. That's the kind of experience you get with this one. By the way, when I read about this on the other side, thepixels.com, I mentioned Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts. And if you like Tears of the Kingdom, you maybe want to go back and try that game, because it's maybe that game, but with Zelda. Anyway, compare their launches. Yeah, Redfall was terrible. This game's real good. That's an easy one. The Redfall sucked. This doesn't suck. Is Nintendo intrinsically different from other publishers? That's a tough one. I would say personally, I think they tend to be a little bit more clean than a lot of other publishers. You know, you go on Twitter, you go on Reddit, and a lot of people will say Nintendo is anti-consumer, they're terrible, yada, yada, yada. There was no question in my mind that this game was going to be fine when it came out. And I don't know that I could say that for any other publisher. What do you think, Sebastian?
I can agree with that. I thought about this question a lot when I saw it. I think about the fact that getting this game took us 6 years.
Right.
And some people were really not happy with that. And they were like, it's such a long time to wait. And I actually think that Nintendo is really good about waiting. And sometimes that's what you have to be good at to make sure that your stuff is ready to go. And I would actually prefer that always over having something that is so unfinished, like Redfall seems right. to be. Because even if they pushed back like Tears of the Kingdom another couple of months and were like, hey, we just need more time to do it, I would have been okay with that. And I think that Nintendo knows that at the end of the day, putting out that finished product that looks good and plays well and makes people happy is worth all of the whining and complaining that you get about not wanting to please your consumers right away.
Right.
And like, I think for me, like one of the good examples of that, at least in my opinion, is like last year we got 2 Pokemon games. I didn't like either one of them.
Oh, no.
I think in a way, like it just felt like both of them were really rushed. And I felt like it hadn't actually been that long since we had a Pokemon game before that. And I was like, sometimes it's okay to space it out. And usually Nintendo is pretty good about that. And I do think that makes them a little different from other publishers who seem to want things to come out faster to make people happy.
Right. I definitely, I noticed a lot of, you know, talk online on Twitter about, you know, how is it that Tears of the Kingdom came out and it's in such good shape despite having all these weird physics things going on? Why is it not buggy? And I'm like, well, if you think about it, Breath of the Wild's been out 6 years now. I don't want to be ungenerous. This game is great. This is basically a really big expansion pack for Breath of the Wild. So they've had a long time to correct on the issues that game had, which it didn't have any to begin with. The other aspect of it is it's running on a hardware that we are familiar with. There is no question about what a Switch is, mostly junk, but it's not a PC. You're not taking Tears of the Kingdom and saying, hey, you know, you have to run really well on this vast array of hardware configurations. You have this one very specific one, and if you can run well on that, or run well enough on that, you're in good shape, and that's what you got. Let's see here. The Super Mario Brothers movie is by far the year's most successful movie, having grossed over $1.3 billion. I can't even count that high. given the success, what do we think of a Legend of Zelda movie? I mean, I think it's a pretty obvious next step, and I think it'd do pretty well. What do you think?
I agree. And if you're okay with it, I'm going to be a perpetually online person for a second.
Oh, please do.
I spend a lot of time in fandom circles. So I have a lot of experience.
My condolences. I'm so sorry for you.
I have a lot of experience with like headcanons that people have. And one of the big things that I always see is that Link does not talk. Even like we have like 2 examples in the series of him actually saying words. But other than that, nothing. So there is like a headcanon that people came up with that said that Link doesn't talk because he uses some form of sign language. I love that headcanon so much.
I see.
And I think that if they ever did a movie, I wouldn't be able to watch it if he wasn't using sign language and he was talking. And I know that sounds so nitpicky. I would watch it regardless, really. But I thought it was like such a good way to adapt that to screen and explain like why he doesn't speak throughout the entire game.
That he has to use sign language, that he just doesn't have access to typical forms of expression.
Yeah.
I see. That's an interesting thought, actually. Speaking of which, actually, we have this next question here. I don't know if you wrote this one or if Nathan wrote this one.
I did not write this.
I bet our producer, Chris Mitchell, wrote this one, actually. This is like something that he would write. Which version of Link would be a good fit for the silver screen? Cartoonish green tunic Link or sexy open world? Sexy? Sexy open world Link. I don't know who's writing these things. So I feel like the Mario movie, based on what I've seen, I actually haven't watched it yet. I'm waiting for the right moment to see that one, because I know it's going to be special. But what I've heard about the Mario movie is that it really leans into the classic take on Mario. And I feel like in this case, maybe the classic take on Link might be preferable. It says animated or live action animated hybrid. In my brain, it's definitely going to be an animated film. And can we avoid, excuse me, princess vibes? So I lied, actually, when we talked earlier about our Zelda experience. I completely forgot that a few years back, by they I mean some fans, remade the CDI Zelda games. And I definitely finished those. I have finished a few Zelda games, and those are two of them. And they definitely count, I guess. And I would like the films to avoid that aesthetic as much as possible. What do you think?
As far as like cartoonish versus open world, I can see it going either way. I would say I would probably prefer the cartoonish looking one because I would prefer to see it animated. I don't want to see who they would cast as a live action Link. I just don't want to see it ever.
So you don't think Orlando Bloom is maybe the person we're looking for?
No.
Gotcha.
But at the same time, like, I would, knowing that they would probably make him talk, I don't want to know who his voice actor would be either. So it's kind of a double-edged sword for me as somebody who really likes the series.
But I think sword that you stick to a sword with the fusion ability.
Exactly.
Right.
But I do think, like, going the cartoonish route would work a lot better. But at the same time, like, I feel like most of the people that have started playing Zelda recently would really only know that open world interpretation of Link. So I really would just be curious to see how they would go about making those decisions, knowing that, like, on one hand, you have a generation of people who grew up with Link wearing his green tunic and being followed around by a little fairy that's very annoying. Versus newer players who are used to this, like, blue tunic, very, how do I put this nicely? Very, like, beachified version of Link.
You could say sexy. We have sexy in the notes. That's fine.
Yeah, all right. I'll say it. Yeah. I don't know how they... Like, it's just an interesting thing, because I feel like, in a sense, they might actually have to go with Sexy Link, because I think people would riot otherwise.
Because, you know, that's the most modern take on the character, yeah. For one. And for two, people just like to thirst over things. Speaking of which, we have this next part of the notes, and that's going to be fun, too. Speaking of that, you know, we talk about this movie. Apparently, Eiji Aonuma, the producer of Zelda, wants there to be a movie, so that's cool. Means we'll probably see one. From a numbers perspective, good God. Tears of the Kingdom sells 10 million copies in 3 days. Breath of the Wild, which has been near the top of the NPD numbers. What do you call them? Circana. The top of the Circana numbers for the past 7 years has only sold 30 million. Tears of the Kingdom sold 10 million in 3 days. What do we think about numbers? I think math is really hard, personally.
I agree. Like you said earlier, I can't count to 10 million. So
fantastic.
I read this article that is linked here, and I thought it was so interesting because they did mention that, like, Breath of the Wild is only 30 million in the last 7 years. And I started wondering, like, why Tears of the Kingdom blew up the way that it did. And then I thought back to maybe like 2-3 weeks before it dropped, and I thought about my Twitter timeline and how I hadn't seen a single soul talk about Tears of the Kingdom. And then they revealed what Ganon was going to look like and said, hey, here's this guy, and he's voiced by Matt Mercer. And then I saw nothing but Tears of the Kingdom on my timeline for 3 weeks.
You know, I saw this in the notes. I was mostly kidding about not reading the notes for these podcasts, but I did have to look up a quote-unquote thirst trap Ganon. And when you play Tears of the Kingdom, the first 10 minutes or so, you come across this spooky mummy guy. And I'm like, people really thought this mummy guy was that hot? Is that what we're going crazy for? This old decrepit mummy? Do I have a chance after all? But No. If you look it up, Ganon is super hot in Tears of the Kingdom, and I guess people are really into that, and it's helped sell copies, and that's great. Speaking of stuff that it's helped sell copies, the third and final trailer for Tears of the Kingdom was apparently designed to curb sentiment that it was just glorified DLC for Breath of the Wild. Do you feel like Tears of the Kingdom is mostly just an expansion or DLC for Breath of the Wild? How do you feel about that?
So in my own notes, I actually put that I did not feel like it was like
you
a
have your own notes.
DLC. Yeah, I have like a separate note doc.
Man.
I felt like I saw that sentiment a lot, and I was thinking about it a lot while I was kind of looking through and doing my research. And I feel like when you first start the game, that's the impression it gives, because it starts off so similar in a way. But then as you kind of play through more, you start to see that it's a continuation of the story. So not trying to give any spoilers or anything here.
Well, just a basic thing. Like back in the day, you were able to move specifically metal items. You had electrokinesis, magnetokinesis. You could move metal stuff with that ability. We've kind of evolved that idea. And now you can move everything, just et cetera, et cetera. I feel like a lot of the stuff that you see in Tears of the Kingdom is, you know, we took Breath of the Wild as a base and we built so much more up the top of it.
Definitely. But I also saw, like, a lot of people saying that they, when they kept the map the same, they were like, that's what made them think that it was going to be like a DLC instead of its own game.
The map is definitely bigger than I thought it would be.
And then I was like, they really curbed that by adding like the sky and the depths. And there is so much extra stuff now that you can explore. And they kept adding in all these like little throwbacks to older Zelda games. And they upped the ante on the story. And they did all this really great stuff to try to make it its own game. So it didn't seem just like a DLC. And I think you just have to like play a little further in than the first like 15 minutes of the Sky Island to really get a feel for how different it actually is from Breath of the Wild while still being in the same like playing field as Breath of the Wild is.
You know, it's cool that you mentioned the depths too. I didn't actually see all the trailers for Tears of the Kingdom. I'm going to be honest. I try to avoid a lot of hype for games because I feel like it's better to be pleasantly surprised if something comes out and it's got stuff you didn't expect. I didn't realize there would be a third tier to the world map. When the depths turned out to be an additional world map on top of the sky and the surface, that was really impressive to me. I don't know if they talked about that in the trailers or what, but I didn't see it coming.
I don't think they mentioned it in the trailers. And I think that was actually really smart on their part, because then you gave something for everybody to be like, oh man, it really is so much bigger than we thought.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun. I had more fun in the depths, I think, than I did on the Sky Islands.
The Sky Islands feel a little bit, I wouldn't say barren necessarily, but the depths are basically an entire new section of the map on par with the surface. Like, at the very least, they are the size of Breath of the Wild, and that's insane. That's nuts.
Yeah, and I thought it was just so cool. Like, I loved poking around down there because there was all sorts of stuff to find.
Right.
But the Sky Islands do have the gachapon machines that spit
that's
out.
True.
Different pieces, so you can strap rockets to Koroks and send them over cliffs, which is what I like to do. It's revenge for Breath of the Wild and not being able to find the last like 4 Korok seeds I needed.
So I gotta ask you something, because I have a coworker who keeps asking me about this and I keep forgetting to do it. Can you strap like balloons or rockets to a horse?
Not that I know of. I have not tried. I love my horses.
Because she was definitely like, hey, you should hook up balloons to your horse and it'll be like an up. And I'm like, I haven't seen up, but animal abuse, I'm always for that. Let's go. But I keep forgetting to do it. So I'll have to check that out and maybe put that in the review after the podcast. Now, the last part of this one is obviously question mark thirst trap Ganon. You sure you didn't write this?
So in the one under other items, I didn't write thirst trap Ganon. And I didn't write it because he is not a thirst trap. That's not the right word.
Okay. Because a thirst trap is when you've been to the gym and you're really swole and you take some pictures on Insta and everybody looks at you like, oh, you're so hot. And that's my life. That is my life. Right down here. Notes, miscellanea, and magic bits. A touch on the Breath of the Wild / Tears of the Kingdom software. What do we think about the new generation of Zelda versus the old generation is what this is trying to say. And I'm going to be honest. I think it's a lot better. I think it's more accessible. I didn't tend to finish previous Zelda games. And I think a lot of that is because the new generation of Zelda offers you more options for solving problems. I don't know if you've done the Fire Temple yet in Tears of the Kingdom, but I will tell you that I definitely skipped like 90% of that just by being cheesy and using the Ascend power. And that's the kind of thing that I'm really happy exists in this game, and I think it makes it better. What do you think?
I can definitely agree with that. I haven't done the Fire Temple yet. Unfortunately, just like everyone else on the internet, I'm super thirsty, and I went straight to the Zora domain to see Sidon.
That's the one I'm doing now, and Sidon is a hot fish guy. It's reasonable.
He is a hot fish guy. And I also missed him from the last game, and I was like, that's my boy. He's always so happy. So I'd come home from work, and I'd be bummed out, and I'm like, I'm going to go see Sidon, and I'm going to just let him pep me up and make me happy. But I actually wrote this question, so yay me.
I think
that, like I had mentioned earlier, my favorite Zelda game is Phantom Hourglass, which is very much like that traditional Zelda formula of you do those temples in that order, and if you don't do them in that order, you actually can't move on to the next one. You have to do it the way you're supposed to. It also had the Temple of the Ocean King, which everyone hated. And then...
What is it with the water temples in Zelda games? Because that's the part I remember from Ocarina of Time.
So, fun fact. The Ocean Temple in Phantom Hourglass was actually not a water temple. It was, like, on the main island. And every time you completed a temple, you had to go back to that one and make your way up from floor one all the way up to where you needed to go.
Oh man, you're really selling it.
It was a very tedious thing that they put in here. And if you really love doing things like sneak attacking, then that is the area for you. You'll love it. But a lot of people didn't like it. And then they tried to fix that in the next one that came, which was Spirit Tracks, which is just the same game, but on a train instead of a boat. But all of those followed that very, like, fixed way of playing. And then when you got to Ocarina of Time, specifically the one that they remastered for the 3DS, and you got to this, like, semi-open world aspect of the Zelda series, where you had a little more freedom, but you still had to do everything in the order that you were supposed to. And then we had like a couple of other ones that came out and they were all great and good. And then you got to Breath of the Wild. And Breath of the Wild, the first thing that everybody said about it was that they didn't like it because it strayed away from that Zelda formula and it didn't feel like Zelda anymore. But when I played Breath of the Wild, I almost felt like it felt more like Zelda than some of the previous games that had come out. And it had like all of these different ways to play. I'm going to keep it real. I did not beat Ganon in Breath of the Wild until like a week before Tears of the Kingdom came out. And the reason was because I just forgot.
I feel like you're not the only one, so don't feel too bad.
Yeah, I was too busy picking mushrooms and listening to Sidon say the same four lines every time I went to Zora Domain.
Sounds pretty fishy.
And that's kind of what I like about them, though, because like you said, it's really accessible. And it doesn't matter what kind of like gamer you are, there's kind of something for everyone in there, whether you like it really slow paced and you just want to be able to poke around and find things, or if you want to go straight for Ganon after coming out of that cave in only your underwear, you can do either or, and it's completely up to you. And I think in that aspect, the newer Zelda games, so Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, have kind of opened up the world of Zelda, especially to newer people who have never played a Zelda game. And I think that's kind of it's just a really amazing thing to see when people can innovate in a series that's been around for so long and still manage to make it feel so special, even to people who have been playing it forever.
Right. You know, the way that you explained it just now, I'm actually reminded a little bit of Pokemon Go from back in 2016, the way that it kind of introduced Pokemon to people that have maybe never played it before.
I could see that.
Let's see.
Even my mom played Pokemon Go.
I see. Did she play Tears of the Kingdom, though?
No. My mom is not huge on video games, She does love TikTok. And the funniest thing in the world is that the other day she was sitting there on the couch with me and she shows me a TikTok that is cosplayers. One is Link and one is Ganondorf. And all they were doing was talking about Ganondorf's chest. And I started laughing so hard at the thought that people are so into it that my mom has found like thirsty Ganon TikToks.
Amazing. So speaking of, I guess creativity might be the right word here. You can make vehicles and devices, as we've mentioned, and I will say that I've definitely tried to solve every single problem that I've encountered by building some kind of flying machine, even when that's not necessary. Oh no, it's a very small river. Let's construct an airplane. But you can also use them to drag/torture creatures. But is this you?
This one was not me.
You can also use them to drag/torture creatures, both friendly and I didn't know you could do that. Can you do that?
I know for sure you can do it with the Koroks, because there's so many of them littered throughout the game now.
That are like, oh, my friend is over there.
Yeah, and my first inclination was always to, strap a rocket on them and just send them off to go wherever they need to go.
I definitely did them at first, and then eventually there's so many, I'm just like, I don't have time for you, I'm busy.
There are. And then, my boyfriend's been playing nonstop too, and I have been watching him, strap the Koroks to the back of his horse, because you can get
with the harness.
Just, drags them around. I've seen people crucifying them.
What?
They build crosses, and they
Amazing.
Put the Korok on them. And I was like, what happened? As a whole, we all just decided that we were going to
torture these poor Koroks.
And then I was like, I really do think it's a form of revenge from Breath of the Wild, because there were 900 to find in Breath of the Wild or something like that. And I could not find so many of them. And it was always so annoying. So somebody may have... Oh, it is 900. There is 900.
900, my God.
In Breath of the Wild. And,
Surely there's more in Tears of the Kingdom, I'm sure.
I hope not. 900 was more than enough. Nobody needs that many weapon spaces.
There are 1,000 in 1,000 seeds.
An extra 100.
But the good news is that there's only 800 hidden Koroks, and the remaining 200 are for doing the Korok pairs. You get them back together, and so that means there are 100 of those, and I don't feel bad about skipping them anymore.
Nope. I only do as many as I need to, hold the weapons that I want, and then I just let it go.
I see. So it says here, mentioned Nintendo working on Zelda's next film, Super Mario Brothers movie. Yeah, we talked about that already. And the last thing, what is? Are you sure you didn't write this?
I wrote this last one.
Okay,
yeah.
So you and Nate, with the insane online presence this game had, as soon as Ganondorf's new design, am I just not seeing? Hold on, Ganondorf KOTK images. So he's big, and he's swole, and he's got a katana. That's who we're talking about, right?
Yes. And like I said, I'm a perpetually online person, so maybe I've just seen more of this than other people have.
I really thought we were talking about the mummy.
Maybe for some people. I'm not going to lie.
I'm not going to yuck somebody's yum, that's for sure. Yeah.
I just thought it was crazy, because I had friends who have never played a Zelda game. They saw Ganondorf's design and they were like, I'm going to play that game. And I was like, just so you know,
I'm like,
that's
he looks
the
like
villain of the series.
He looks like the one from Wind Waker. That's kind of what I'm taking away. He looks a lot like the one from Wind Waker, and really,
yeah, a little bit. They just like, I don't know, made him high def. It's high def, hydrated Ganondorf.
High def because he's missing half his shirt. That's the term we use, huh?
That's honestly, I think that's what did it for everyone. It's just that like he showed half his chest, and then everybody went, okay, we're on board.
I'm just reminded of the lady from Resident Evil Village. It's that all over again based on these notes.
Yeah, that actually is a really, like, that is exactly what it is. I just think it was crazy that I saw, like, the entire internet start thirsting over him together. And I was like, usually the internet doesn't agree on literally anything. And then
yeah, that's very
on
true.
This particular thing, they were like, yes, we all like Ganondorf. And the amount of times that I had to explain to my friends, though, who have never played Zelda, I'm like, listen, man, you don't get to play as him. You're not going to see him in a positive light.
I see. I mean, like, some people are into bad guys. I don't know.
And I totally, I get the appeal. I do. And I was like, I understand it. I am on board, too. I am part of the problem. Send me straight to horny jail. But
I see.
At the same time, I was like, I think people expected too much out of him once they like had that design. Like, then I started seeing all these people making fan art of like Link, Zelda, and Ganon all working together. And
working,
there was all this stuff.
Working, is that the term?
I'm going to say working because this
okay,
is
we'll
a family
go with that,
friendly
then.
Podcast.
Oh boy.
It was just like, it was just really interesting. And like we had mentioned earlier with it sold so many copies in just like a couple of days. I feel like that was almost part of it. It's just that Nintendo like strategically waited to drop that and to say that Matt Mercer of all people was voicing him. And that just like really got people excited. And I mean, awesome marketing strategy. Good for them.
I, you know, if it works, it works. I can't complain too much about that.
Yeah.
So we've reached the end of this big old shared document full of notes. But with that in mind, did you have any conclusion type stuff you wanted to say about Tears of the Kingdom?
It's really great.
Yeah.
Even though there are parts
it sure
of it
is.
That make me mad.
So is one of the parts that make you mad, is it the fact that you're going to go into your menu and they mix together all the monster parts in the food? I'm like, I'm trying to cook here. I don't want to make dubious food. Please put the food in its own section.
You know what? That would actually be such a smart idea. And I wasn't going to say that, but I do wish that they had like a different section for food and materials.
Right.
So I didn't have to scroll through all of my stuff to find like my one ice choo-choo jelly part to make one arrow. But I have to dig out like every other thing that I've ever put in there. However, I am really happy that they fixed the recipe problem for cooking. And now when you like click on one of your ingredients, it'll show you like every recipe you've ever made with it and how you made it.
I see.
Which is so nice, because before, once you had like eaten that thing or gotten rid of it, that's all you had. And
definitely
then you
didn't notice
figure
that, by
out
the way.
That, huh?
I definitely didn't notice that, by the way. I'm gonna have to go back on, play the game after the podcast, and see that for myself, because I had no idea.
Yeah,
about that.
I noticed it right away because I spend a lot of time cooking.
I see.
Like in Breath of the Wild, that's why it took me 6 years to beat Ganon, was because I was too busy like making hot buttered apples and stuff to care about the fact that Zelda was struggling for her life.
She should be all right. She can have an apple later.
It was fine. It was all good. So I thought that was really nice. And it kind of shows that in some ways they were listening to what everybody had said about Breath of the Wild and trying to fix some of those problems. Again, I don't want to give any spoilers, but
that's the problem with doing a podcast so soon after the game drops. Is like, yeah. I have a lot of feelings about certain things, but I can't talk about them.
Like the Rito Village storyline, that got me. I was like, I didn't really like that particular storyline, but that's a personal preference. Other than that, you know, it's really great. I think it definitely lives up to all the hype that it got, even though I tried really hard not to hype it up in my head, because I was like, if it blows, I don't want to be sad.
Right. So
I tried to keep my expectations at like a minimal level. And then once I started playing, I was like, I should have known better. It was just, it's going to be good. And then every waking moment that I wasn't doing something else, I was playing this game.
Yeah, this is what I keep telling people. It's like, don't go on the hype train. And that way, when the game comes out, you are always pleasantly surprised. Wow, this game had so much cool stuff, as opposed to, this game didn't have all the cool stuff they said it was going to. Now I'm maddie mad.
And I think it's really easy to do with games like this, especially.
Right.
Where, you know, they've been releasing tons of trailers and trying to get everybody really excited. And I think...
I guess it worked between that and, I guess, Hot Ganon.
Yeah.
So yeah, Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. We have a review coming for you on Pop Zara sooner than later. It's one of those things where... You know, my reviewing philosophy is that you don't necessarily have to beat something to review it, because if a game isn't really making me want to beat it, that's kind of the review in itself, isn't it? But in this case, it's been a couple days because I've been playing the game. I can't stop playing it. I got to stop playing and actually write up the game soon, though. Real soon. Please look forward to it at popzara.com. I want to thank Sebastian Stoddard for being here. I think it's the first podcast I've done with you, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Awesome. Well, hopefully it's the first of many, because this was a great time. I want to thank all of you listeners for coming to the Pop Zara podcast and listening to what we had to say. I'm going to assume you're listening to this far in the future because you're busy playing Tears of the Kingdom, as is everybody, I guess. But I hope you enjoy it when you do listen to it. Thanks, everybody. This has been the Pop Zara podcast. And hey, I've been Corey Gallagher. That's been Sebastian Stoddard. And hey, we'll see you on the next level.
Thanks for listening to the Pop Zara podcast. Remember to like, follow, share, and subscribe on your favorite podcast app or service.